All right. So, this is going. Hopefully, this will behave itself. Behave yourself. Only a tech person can do that.
It's like horse whispering.
Yeah.
Listeners, please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes. So now you know.
When I was working in the office of the Hebrew school where I worked before, I would like to talk to the copy machine because it was very finicky and I could reliably get it to work for me. And I always told people it was because I was nice to it, because other people would be like, this piece of shit doesn't work. And I'd be like, you're hurting its feelings. I was also 16 years old, so.
Right.
And to be fair, it gave me plenty of trouble, but I think because I felt sympathetically toward it, it didn't frustrate me. It made me able to still work with it in a loving capacity.
Awesome.
The hyper-empathy got me.
Hyper-empathy.
Yeah.
.com.
Episode 18, I Know Why the Lyrebird Sings. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Moll hurtle from point A to point B while ruminating on fame, what we look for in and from celebrity. Also, they share a few words on listening, extrapolative thinking, and purism in art, taxidermy adjacent and otherwise.
About this on the podcast already, but I was on the subway and I was like entranced by the guy sitting across from me because he was very carefully extracting multiple frisbees. These were like designer frisbees. They were all emblazoned with the name, and like carefully polishing them and like replacing them in his bag. And it was clearly a specially sized frisbee bag. And lovingly checking them for, like, scuffs and scratches. And then when he was finished, he pulled out of the side pocket a couple of, like, mini frisbees. And I was just like, if he's not getting off before me, I might miss my stop because I gotta see how this ends.
I love this.
I might have to follow him. I mean, I feel like this happens in large metropolitan areas, shall we say.
This specific thing, or?
Well, no, wait for me to finish.
Okay, sorry.
Let me make my point.
Right.
Where people will expect to run into glitterati, say, or celebrities, or even micro-celebrities, whatever. And so they will ask for an autograph, being like, this person probably is a famous person. And then I can look them up later and tell everybody I met this famous person. And then I got their autograph. I'll ask for to take a picture with them.
Right.
But, so, I mean, should I have asked for his autograph?
Probably in the world of Frisbee, this guy was a celebrity. Like,
who's to say, though? Maybe he was just, like, you know, just an average Joe with a Frisbee satchel just like anybody else.
But I'm just, like, you know, as so often, focusing on the idea of celebrity, being a would-be celebrity myself, I think, if I'm honest.
Would be as in would like to be?
I would like to be, you know, modestly. You know, the world would just acknowledge me. I don't want to, yeah, like, have to go out. And
just the velvet smoking jacket with the leather elbow patches and the little bubble pipe kind of celebrity, like a fireside, very comfortable, chill thinking man's celebrity.
Yeah, sure. I'll cop to that. But here's a sort of rhetorical. Is it possible that we are all celebrities? This starts to sound like a sort of a new age guru type of thing. Maybe we're all celebrities if you just define the field narrow enough.
Like, yeah, if you use words wrong enough, they can mean whatever the fuck you want them to
mean. Well, no, but I'm not that vague and generalized. I'm just saying in a narrow enough sphere, like, you know, maybe we're all... Of course, that's not what's meant by celebrity.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, maybe split the difference. Maybe, like you were saying, a niche celebrity. Or like Steve Burns said, he was fame-ish.
Yeah, fame-ish. But fame-ish as in he would get recognized on the street. He showed up to a kid's birthday party and all the kids broke out because he was Steve from Blue's Clues. But
right,
like,
right.
You know.
So how famous else, are we?
I would say less than that. I mean, considering, I don't know if a single person listens to our podcast who doesn't know us in person. I don't know if we're famous at all.
Yeah, we're famous within a very narrow range.
Famous, I think, means other people know you who you've never met.
And, like, and there's a lot of them.
Usually, yes. And
yeah,
also a lot of
I think that's a key thing to the common understanding of famous.
Yes. A couple of years ago, I saw Hozier in concert. And he's like one of my all-time favorite musical artists.
Hozier?
Yes. He's a... he's getting quite famous these days. Some of his songs have gotten radio play, like, a lot in the past, but, like, some of his more recent releases are getting a lot more radio play, and so tickets are getting more expensive, and, like, he's booking bigger venues and whatever. Not that he wasn't already famous, but he's, like, getting really famous, you know? Which is great and all that, but I got to see him a couple of years ago at a pretty small, intimate theater. Somebody bought me the tickets, and it was great. I was like 10 feet away from him, and my companion was like, do you want to meet him? Do you want to like stand online and meet him? And I said no, and they were like, really? And I was like, no, like, because here's the thing, you know, when you meet a celebrity, what you really want, or what I want out of that experience, is for them to be just as impressed with you as you are with them. Because, like, I'm an artist, I'm a writer, I'm pretty proud of what I make and what I write, and I think anybody being like, I really like what you make, I think there's basis for that. I don't have that imposter syndrome, like, you know, I think what I make is good and I'm proud of what I make. So I'm like, what I would want out of that interaction is for us to be peers and for us to like meet on the same level of like, yes, you make something incredible that makes me feel a lot of things, and I also make something incredible that makes you feel a lot of things. So we can talk like we're equals or whatever, like we have something to talk about, and it's not just hero worship or whatever.
But
like,
you figure the odds that they would know your work are small enough.
I think it's absolutely zero.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I mean, I have a podcast now, so things have changed. Maybe he's heard me. But we could always see if he would come on the podcast to play music in our car. But
I'm remembering the reaction of Danny Aiello.
Yeah.
Probably late. I don't know if he's around anymore. Character actor. You know that story.
Yes. You should tell it for the listeners, though.
For the listeners. So I'm outside the Comic Strip, a comedy club in Manhattan. I'm a fan. I've met and talked to Alan Colmes, who was the MC. Very funny comedian. Ended up having a radio show and later was on Fox as the liberal with Sean Hannity. It was Hannity and Colmes. But before that ever happened, fan of Alan Colmes, who MC'd a lot at the comic strip. And there's a guy there who looks familiar to me, and he is kind of at the door to go in when I am, and he ends up holding the door open for me because obviously I'm going in. And I stop and I say, oh, you look familiar. I think I've seen you here. Are you a fan of Alan Colmes? And he has a couple of his friends who are standing there too, and he goes like, believe this guy. am I a fan of Alan Colmes. He was obviously pretty pissed off, and I was like, whoa, what just happened? So, like, I go in, and then, like, somebody who was, like, near and overheard this said, like, dude, that was Danny Aiello, you know, who was, like, I mean, objectively way better known than Alan Colmes, who was pretty well known on the, you know, comedy club circuit, but still.
Yeah.
At that point.
Right.
Yeah, so he definitely did not get what he wanted out of that interaction.
And I think that a more grounded, more down-to-earth kind of person might have been kind of, like, tickled by that.
Yeah. I came away with, you know, not that warm and fuzzy a feeling about Danny Aiello. I mean, and the thing is, he was obviously there because he was a fan of Alan Colmes. So I think it hit a little close to home.
So if you were to become a household name, which of your great works up until this point, and I'm just saying absolutely anything that you've done.
Yeah.
Would you want that recognition for?
Ironically, I have to say as yet, for the next short while, unpublished, till I self-publish it, short story, pretty much the only short story I've written.
I'll give you writing in general, if you're, like, writing.
Well, no, this story.
This story specifically, this would be your pièce de résistance.
And the story, ironically enough, is called The Solo, and is about... Well, I don't want to spoil it, but it's definitely on brand. It's on topic for what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Based on a dream that I had. Maybe the reason I haven't written a lot of short stories is they don't come to me that easy. But this one, the plot of the story came to me in a dream many a year ago. And all I had to do was, like, flesh it out a little.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the details were in it.
I saw this post, like, yesterday or today that was like, writing is easy, you just have to tell people what happened.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. If I was a household name, what would I want to be known for?
Yeah.
I mean, that I'm not other than Amityville 3D?
Yeah, I mean, Amityville 3D might be it, you know, but...
No, it's not. I mean, I don't think at any point in my life I set out, I wanted to end up being known for PAing on Amityville 3D. I know this comes as a surprise.
It does, considering how much you talk about it on your podcast.
Yeah, well... right. Ooh, that's a seagull.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seagull.
I don't think animals have a thing about needing to be famous.
No, but no asterisk. they
Primates?
Do, well, no. They do, like, some animals do either... I'm thinking lions will be, like, the head of the pride or whatever. The leader of the pride.
Right.
Or you'll have birds that'll, like, attract a mate or whatever. Or it's good for them to attract as many mates as they can or whatever. Like, some animals. I mean, it's really hard to generalize something like that about animals. But animals can have complex social dynamics in which there's, like, a strong hierarchy or whatever. And it's always better to be at the top of the heap.
When you mention, like, you know, trying to attract a mate, I mean, I guess in a sort of mini way, they're trying to become like a celebrity with that particular target of their endeavors.
Well, everyone wants to be wanted, I think.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, if you have a bird that's, you know, building the bower or, you know, doing the little dance or chuckling like a different kind of animal or whatever it is. A babbling brook. Whatever you do to get that, you know, positive feedback.
So wait, bower bird, who's doing a little dancey dance? Is it one of those ones that looks like a black disc with a blue bar in the middle of it?
Maybe. Like one a frisbee? Birds.
Yeah, like a frisbee bird. well, and then the other one's a lyre bird.
Well, the lyre bird is the one that does like a chainsaw or whatever.
I had a show with Phoenix. We were in the other room because it was like kind of intermission time, whatever. It was a taxidermy show.
You said a taxidermy show?
Yeah, it was a taxidermy showcase. It was like, they do them every year. This was our second year going. Anyway, okay. So we were in the other room because we were getting tater tots. And I just could hear what was happening back in the main room. And I was like, that's a lyre bird. Somebody's playing not only a recording of a lyre bird, but a recording I know. Like, I am familiar with. And I went back in the room, and this performer, Tiresias, whom I'm a huge fan of, was doing, like, a weird interpretive puppet show thing where they were dressed as, like, they were half dressed like a lyre bird, half they had, like, a puppet, and they were doing, like, puppetry to lyre bird recordings. And I thought, and I was like, woo! I was like, this is for me. Yeah. I was like, I don't care if the rest of you people are here. There were like, you know, 200 or 300 people there. Probably not 300. Like, you know, maybe 200 or 150. I don't know, whatever. And I was like, this was for me. And like last year, they also performed at that same taxidermy show. And their performance was so good. And I talked to them afterwards. And I was like, in like an elaborate costume and mask. And so like... that happened to be somewhat appropriate to the performance that they had done. And so when I was like, I really felt like this was for me last year, they were like, it was actually because of how I was dressed.
This is so weirdly specific.
They're a micro celebrity and, you know, there are a lot of performers that I get a chance to talk to after shows because Phoenix is a performer and... so, I don't know, it's nice to be able to tell somebody I've been coming to your shows for, like, a while, and I'm a huge fan.
But, Lyrebird, anyway, is the bird that I think does the imitations and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's like, their calling card, so to speak.
It is quite literally their calling card.
Exactly. Whereas the bowerbird...
Yes. Builds a little bower.
Yeah, and like, you know, like little beads.
He makes a little gallery, yeah.
Little beads, you know, a couple
That's what bird I would be if I were a bird. Like, that's... Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
If I were to pick a bird equivalent of who I am as a human,
Is this one of your, like, questions on
date? Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, what kind of bird would you be?
Not bird, but animal.
Or animal?
Yeah.
You're being open-minded. You don't want to just... narrow it down to birds.
Well, also, I don't even narrow it down to actual existing animals. Because, like, when I ask
fantasy.
Somebody, like, what animal would you be if you could pick? Like, they'll say dog or whatever, and then they'll be like, what about you? And I'll be like, a griffin. And they'll be like, that's not fair. I didn't realize I could do fantasy creatures. And I'm like, you need to broaden your mind. Because if I... didn't specify something in the question, it's because I wanted to leave that open-ended.
It sounds like
I've been thinking for a long time about these questions. Obviously, if it's open-ended, that's intentional.
It sounds like you have a red pen and you're downgrading them immediately.
It's no, I'm not downgrading them. It's just that I want to encourage people to think outside the box. If you grew up reading a lot of fairy tales, a lot of stories where people make deals with fey creatures and you're like, oh, well, the fey can't lie, but what they can is mislead. Or you read a lot of riddles or whatever, or do a lot of crossword puzzles, which, you know, mom does a lot of crossword puzzles and whatever. You have to expand the way you think about things. You have to think figuratively. You have to think more about what is not said than what is said some of the time. And, like... these are important critical thinking skills. Not only reading the thing and comprehending what you've read, but doing like extrapolative thinking. I don't know if that's a word, but if it's not, it should
be. It is now.
Yeah. So like, you know, when I'm reading stories to my students, I will stop while I'm reading and be like, Does anybody remember what this is that we talked about earlier? Like, you know, Hanukkah's coming up, so I was reading them the story of Hanukkah, and they mentioned a menorah, and I was like, last week I told you what the word menorah means, does anybody remember? And they were like, oh, it's the thing you light up for Hanukkah. I was like, okay, but what is it, what does the word actually mean? Because I told you last week, and somebody was like, it means lamp, which is true. And I was like, correct. And I was like, what do we call the menorah that we light on Hanukkah? And finally somebody said Hanukkiah, which is great. That was the right answer. And so, like, engaging them, like, getting them to engage with what we're reading, that is a critical thinking skill that most grown-ups do not have, where you read something and you think about, well, who's writing this? What is their perspective? What is being said? What is not being said? You know, it's very important when you're reading articles, news articles, when you're reading contracts. You know, it's super important life skills, just literacy, basic literacy. And if you can explain to kids why it's important for them to know this kind of stuff early on, it'll help them pay attention to those things. If you show them those pictures and you're like, what's wrong about this picture? And it's like, well, the moon is out during the daytime, and this person has two different colored shoes on, and like, this person doesn't have a nose when everybody else has a nose, and like, whatever. If they pay attention to what they're looking at, and rather than just telling you it's a scene with a family in it and they're standing outside, like, that is the content of the picture. But if you can get into the details and see what looks wrong about it, you know, that's a really important life skill.
Well, the broader thing that comes to mind from very much related to improv, which we've talked about, is listening, learning to listen. And it's a fascinating and sort of elusive thing. Like there are different levels, you know. Like I noticed, like, in my study of improv career, like early on, like you want to listen to your scene partner. That's important if you're going to build a scene together, obviously. So when you're starting out, you know, and your teachers say, you know, it's important to listen, you're sort of distracted by the fact that, like, what the hell's going on? I don't know what's coming next. And so you try really hard. And what I notice in the beginning is, while you're, like, on stage or whatever, you're performing in a scene, early in your career as an improviser, you put yourself in an attitude where your face and everything, it looks like you're listening. You're like performing listening, and you're putting so much energy into looking and acting and being in a posture like you're listening, that it creates a noise that drowns out in your head any possibility of hearing what your scene partner is doing. So you have to lose that. And it's like, no, it's not about looking like you're listening. It's about really doing it. So
yeah.
Then you get to the next level where it's like, all right, pay attention. What are the words that they're saying? And then, you know, once you get that, all right, that's good. Then it's like, not just what are the words they're saying, but what is it? How are they feeling? Like, what? How's their character feeling? And what? Why are they saying what they're saying? Or even beyond that, like, why? How are they acting? What's the energy level? You know, what clues are you getting from those things? So it's like you sort of, if you're lucky, you go deeper and deeper into deeper listening until hopefully it becomes second nature.
I think we've all encountered it where you're like in a conversation and you're like, we're not meeting in the middle, and like that, it really feels like that's the reason that they're not getting what I'm saying, and not just not comprehending, but they're not really waiting for me to finish either.
And it's also, as it's going down, you can tell, like, I mean, I've been in improv scenes. You can feel it in the room. You know, when somebody, you can see that they just can't wait. Like the thing you said, like, do you listen or do you wait to talk?
Yeah.
And you can just, it's like, that guy's waiting to talk.
Yeah. And sometimes they're not even waiting.
Yeah, right. But you know, like, they've got an idea. We just, you know, it's okay. Ideas are good, but.
But the thing about improv is sometimes you have to let three or four pretty good ideas go, because because you're being egocentric or whatever.
Yeah. And your scene partner is coming up with other stuff, and like, yes. You know, you want to mind that.
Yes.
Ideally. Right. I mean, the thing is that for improv, it's a collaborative art. So, like, if you're just going to want to, like, win the scene, there's mm-hmm. people who want to win the scene.
Well, they want to be celebrities.
That's, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess so. But in a specific way. I mean, the insult in class, which I probably told you is, I mean, you should just do stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, I love stand-up, but in the context of improv, it has sometimes been used as an insult.
Yeah.
You know, all right, so be a solo.
Yeah.
What am I doing here? Harking back to Tiresias.
Yes.
And the...
By the way, do you recognize the name? Do you get the literary reference?
Oh, wasn't that somebody in, like, the Odyssey or
Correct.
Some shit like
yeah.
that?
Tiresias, the blind seer.
The blind guy.
They go to Hades to talk to him.
Right. Why did I bring up Tiresias? There was something earlier, that famous performance with the lyrebird.
Famous.
And puppets.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other details?
The recording that I knew of the lyrebird.
Some element of the performance. There was a moment where, I mean, there were puppets.
Yeah, it was kind of a lyrebird puppet. So, like, the puppet was, like, the head of the lyrebird, and the performer was kind of dressed almost in like, a gray ghillie suit.
Okay, we can come back to that. But anyway, there was a...
We don't have a lot of time to come back to some of these things.
Maybe we'll hit traffic. don't give up hope. But there was some element where I started to feel like this is very clownish.
Yeah, I mean, well, so the first show that I saw them at was a show that they were emceeing called Underworld, which was a clown cabaret kind of show.
Uh-huh, all right, so I love the idea, but it was clown combined with something else, something unclown-y.
Kind of macabre, I mean.
Macabre, ornithology, clown, I don't know, I've lost...
You've lost the plot.
I've lost what I had thought of before.
That's fine.
Lost in the metaphor.
Lost in the sauce.
Exactly.
Blissed out in the slop.
Oh. That's a nice alternate way of putting that.
Well, it's like there's this picture of a seal or a sea lion that's like head to toe just like coated in a thick, like viscous layer of mud. Just looking so pleased with itself and just like very zen and chilled out. And somebody captioned it blissed out in the slop. And I have used that phrase ever since.
As you should.
Yeah.
So what is a taxidermy show?
Oh, so it was like a showcase. So they had different categories, and then people would submit their taxidermy for judging. Within those categories, and the judges would pick best in category and best in show.
People would submit, again, a phrase I can't. People would submit their taxidermy.
Yeah.
You just lay that out there, like,
you know what taxidermy is, right?
I do know what taxidermy is. And
so like, you know, they would have a stuffed animal or an arrangement of animal bones or pinned bugs or whatever it is, and they would submit them within these categories that were appropriate to whatever they had made.
Give me a sample category.
There's one that's like
The Odyssey.
No. No, well, there's one that was like fantastic creatures or whatever, where you take real animal elements, fur or bones or whatever, and you create something that's not found in nature, like a jackalope or whatever is a classic
right.
example.
Or a griffin.
So you have something like that. You have, they had a category for things that were not, they had a category for wearables, so they would incorporate bones or other animal matter. They had a category for things that were not technically taxidermy, like they didn't have any actual animal parts in them, but were still taxidermy adjacent. And then there was a category for little scenes. People had made little scenes that incorporated taxidermy in some way.
Taxidermy adjacent is another thing.
Well, so somebody, one of the people for that category, they had a skull. It was just like a, they had bought like a plastic skull. Not, I don't know if it was plastic, but plastic skull, something non-real skull. And then on the inside of it, they had constructed a medical theater, you know, like an old...
An operating room.
Yeah, but like, you know, with the viewing porches, the like, you know, balconies.
The gallery.
Yeah. And then there was a teeny tiny human skeleton that they had made out of like tape and paper clips in it and everything. But it was like meticulously crafted little scene. So it's not taxidermy, but it was like adjacent to like the macabre medical arts and dissection and all of that. So, wow. You know,
so there's like a
like
contest,
that.
Like a yeah. contest.
Yeah. Each category, there was a best in category and then there were, there was a best in show and two runners up for best in show.
Have you ever entered?
No, this was our second time attending.
Okay.
I suppose I could, for the non-taxidermy, like,
right.
you know, taxidermy adjacent thing.
Right, because you don't want to collect dead animal parts.
I do have some dead animal parts is the thing that I have collected personally.
Okay.
I've just found various bones. I have some vertebrae and things that I've found. But okay. I also have snail shells and okay. Bugs, plenty of dead cicadas and things
right.
That I haven't pinned or anything, but maybe one day I will.
Dead Cicada sounds like a band name.
Dead Cicada should 100% be a band name. And I think every 7 years they should come out with an album.
I think I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
Fine. And so, yeah, here we're nearing point B.
Yeah.
As it were.
As it were.
So just to recap, to think, we've covered a lot.
Yeah.
What the hell was it?
Celebrity. Listening. Reading comprehension.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. So, any last words?
Any thoughts? Where have we been on this ride?
Yeah.
Well, celebrity. I mean, you know, it seems to me. So you're an artist, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So it seems to me that you want to be. Well known, probably to the extent that, or not. I mean, John le Carré, who's like this wonderful writer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I read recently an interview, maybe fairly late in his life, where he said he just would write even if nobody read it because he loves to write.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly been the case for me.
Like, yeah,
I've been fortunate enough that in publishing stuff online, people have looked at my work, but. And enjoyed it, and have told me they enjoy it, which is, you know, even a step beyond.
I think for an artist like such as yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a little bit of a dilettante and whatever. I almost feel like I'm sort of coming back into it late in life. But
mm-hmm.
I think if you really have the vocation, yes, then the value of where you would do it regardless
yeah.
or regardless would be that you're not besotted with fame for its own sake, but I think the value is that if you make it,
yeah.
Then it makes it easier for you to, like, you know, just do it as a gig without having to do the day job.
Yes. I mean, so here's my thing, and maybe this will help tie everything together.
Okay.
I've always said that my dream, the thing that matters the most to me, is I want to change the world. And to me, that means the people in my life, the people in my little corner of the world.
Okay.
And so, like, I don't need to be a celebrity. I don't need to be well-known. But just to make a connection with some people, for somebody to see my art and for it to mean something to them, and for it to make them feel held and loved and seen. Like, you know, and I try to do that for the people in my life. The people in my life have heard this already.
Certainly our listeners.
Yeah, for sure.
They know.
But like, you know, but that's what it's all about to me. And I would make art, I would write regardless of it making me any money, which in fact is exactly what I do. I do that without it making me any significant amount of money. But I would still do it because it's an expression of my soul, and other people see it, and maybe they see some facet of their soul expressed too, and that means something to them. And so you don't have to be a celebrity. You don't have to be famous. You don't even have to be fame-ish. But the thing that fame brings you is those people who might see a part of their soul reflected in your work, and that is really the benefit to putting things out there and having eyes on your work.
Whoa. Listeners, I'm here with a true artist. Malka Liora.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's me.
Thank you for all that. Thank you for all you do.
Handshake?
Terrorist fist bump this time.
Okay.
Okay.
As one does.
Get home safe.
Get home safe. I love you.
I love you too. And it's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Okay.